Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting.
Thanks, everyone, for coming to the 8th Annual Podcaster All-Star Panel. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm very kind. I'm John Suntress. I do a podcast called Word Balloon, and I've been doing it since May of 2005. This is my 9th year that we're going into, and it's a one-on-one podcast interview show. I will let the others introduce themselves and describe their podcast. So, Pantsaru, why don't you take over?
Certainly. I'm Brian Chrisman from the Comic Geek Speak podcast. We've been around since March of 2005. It's an ensemble cast of about 5 other guys and talk about current comics, old comics, movies, TV, the whole gamut.
Yeah, you guys talk about everything. I was a guest on that for a while, and then in 2007 started my own podcast, the Comic Book Page podcast. We do weekly reviews of a DC, Marvel, and another comic. We do once a month talking about the sales figures for the top 300 comics, top 300 trades. We also talk about what's new in previews every month, figuring that's when people are actually need to know what's coming out and stuff. And then sometimes we do some roundtables and some other discussions. So, fun stuff.
Hi, my name is Heidi McDonald. I do a podcast called More to Come for Publishers Weekly with Calvin Reed and Kate Fitzsimons. And because it's for Publishers Weekly, we really talk about publishing news. I mean, we do occasionally do movie reviews, like we all went and saw Man of Steel, but mostly it's about book news, publishing, insider stuff, and so on.
Is there Godzilla happening? What's happening outside?
What's going on?
That was in New York, the subways. I'm Jimmy Aquino. I do the podcast Comic News Insider. Pause for applause. No? All right, great. But we've been around since April 2005. And we're a weekly magazine-style format show. We review new comics every week, a TV show, a movie, usually on the nerdy side. We cover the news, the industry, an interview, perhaps. And we do top 3 segments. We recommend things every week. And Heidi has been on the show several times. Many of these guys have been on the show and have guested and said hello. Every Tuesday and Wednesday we record.
I'm Connor Kilpatrick. I'm 1/3 of iFanboy, and we have many iFanboy shows, mainly the Pick of the Week podcast, which we run down the best books of the week. We've been doing it since, I think, November of 2005, somewhere around there. So it's been a long time. We've talked it out. We're done.
Sorry, you're retiring.
Making an announcement right here.
You're retiring the podcast today. Hi, my name is Ben Blacker. I'm the creator of the Nerdist Writers Panel and the co-host of the Nerdist Writers Panel Comic Edition, which features 3 other hosts who are much better than I am, and also the co-creator of the Thrilling Adventure Hour stage show on Style of Old Time Radio.
Thanks for coming.
I'm thrilled to be talking to this sold-out house.
So I'm assuming we've got listeners of the podcast here. Everybody, like, up to speed on podcasting and everything?
Or any podcast.
Excellent. Yeah, really. This is true.
Is there anyone who does listen to any podcasts?
Very cool. And yeah, we will leave time at the end for questions and stuff. But I did want to, because we have representing on the dais so many different podcasts, but they also cover the industry in different ways. Obviously, I think there's a very big shift going on right now in media in general, but certainly comic books. The explosion since tablets has been amazing and has created this opportunity. Not just for Marvel and DC to increase their audiences, but I think the second and third tier publishers as well. And I just wanted to, talk about some of the stuff that's going on right now. So, to start, I know from my own experience, it's been great hearing from creators that are thrilled with the opportunities that I think the tablets have afforded digital comics. Their audience is growing. They are testing the waters with their own creator-owned stuff right now. I think it's neat. And it's interesting because, again, I think it gives these other publishers this equal footing on the digital platform to compete in a way that they've never been able to before.
Yeah, from what I don't read comics on the tablets. I just read them the old-fashioned way. I'm an old guy like that. And from the information I've been gleaning from talking to a few people just informally, that is still just a small percentage of a lot of the comic sales, like the the big two have. So there's still going to be the, thank God, the comics around that I'm used to. But anything helping industries, you know, grow with the kids, with the
the kids and their newfangled
stuff. With the newfangled gadgets, because I can't keep up with the technology. Anything to get more people reading comics, I think is fine with me. I want this to be around for quite a while. I love reading comics.
John Mayo, you didn't introduce yourself. You talked about your podcast, but yours in particular, you do study numbers.
I do. I kill for the digital sales numbers for a couple of reasons.
You don't get those numbers?
No. They don't give that out. I would love not just to know how they're doing, because it seems to be about 15% of what the print sales are doing, but also it's end reader information, so we can see what the reader trends really are versus the aggregate numbers. But I think it's a real game changer, because when the publishers say that the digital sales are not eating into the print sales, I think they're 100% correct. I mean, print sales are still going down, but they had been before, and they're not going down any faster or anything now. And if it's opening up just this brand new audience and stuff, it's a new on-ramp for comics, much like the spinner rack used to be 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I really want to commend Comixology for their new submit program, where anybody who's got a comic can just submit it to them. They split the cost, I think, or get the proceeds 50-50 or something. And that completely democratizes getting comics out there and stuff in just a wonderful way. I think it's great for the industry.
It may democratize it, but it doesn't change the fact that the most popular ones are still the ones that are popular everywhere.
True.
You can put your book out, but people aren't necessarily going to buy it, even if it's good. I mean,
we have had cases in the past where
there's going to be outliers for sure, but as someone who works in a digital comics company, it's still the companies that are popular, so the ones that are selling.
Oh, totally.
But obviously, success for one of these independent guys is 5,000 copies.
Absolutely.
So it does more for
the difference
them than
is
Marvel
that is it's no different than when you go into a store and there's 100 books on the shelf. There's 100 digital books on the shelf. It's the same thing.
It's not the same thing, though. Because
it's absolutely the same thing.
With this Comixology Submit, anyone can get their book out there.
Oh, absolutely. It just means there's, instead of 100 books, there's 10,000 books on the shelf. There's more to choose from.
But, I mean, when you're talking about books that are selling all the time, I mean, you're just saying Marvel and DC? I mean, is that what you're talking about? I mean, you're talking about, Wimpy Kid. I mean, Wimpy Kid.
No, that's a whole other strata.
But, see, that's why I say, when looking at it from the book industry, when you look at the book sales, the book scan, which we do have access to, but we're not allowed to talk about. But I do get to see book scan numbers. And when you look at those, I mean, it is so way more democratic in the bookstore market. And I think in digital, too.
I don't know. I think the bookstore market is a whole other
beast. Right. But I can see, why are we dismissing the bookstore market?
Well, no, we're not.
I'm not. But I know you're not. But I'm just saying, it's like, see, this is why I feel like, to John's point there, it's so important to look at the overall picture and not just be focused on the direct sales market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's a lot of material that's very successful outside the direct sales market. And actually now, direct sales market is becoming a main driver of this kind of, non-traditional material. But, don't get me wrong, I mean, I really love John's analysis and the Mayo report and everything. I mean, he does some really great numbers analysis. And, I mean, I agree, it's unfortunate we don't have digital numbers, and that we're not really seeing, like, the book scan numbers are very under wraps. So we're not.
I'd like those too, actually. We'll talk afterwards.
If I could just sort of play devil's advocate between both sides here, I see what you're saying about the democracy of it, and see exactly what you're saying about the big two are selling. But personally, and I think it happens at a small scale, which I think is important, is that I'm a new digital comic reader. I got my little iPad mini for Christmas, my sister. And for years, I'm like, I don't know if I could go digital. I like the visceral feel. And as soon as I got my iPad, I'm like, whatever. And so now I'm like, but because of that also, like when I walk into a comic store, which I still do, I love, I do, scan the racks, see what's around. But my main focus is like what Connor would say. I go straight from Marvel, DC, IDW, Dark Horse, Image, things like that. But with the digital platform, I'm tending to find taking a little more time scanning all the independent stuff and the stuff that I normally wouldn't. And sometimes I'll buy it. Because I'm going through to see, like, oh, there's a new publisher I haven't heard of. Or here's something new. Let me check that out. So I can sort of see both sides of your time.
And that's what I like. Because I agree with Connor entirely. What's going to sell is what's big and stuff. But the fact that there are so many fewer barriers to getting the material
out
there.
It's great. But it doesn't change what people are looking for, though. That's my point.
I'm saying it's small scale like that.
it gives them more options to at least sort through and gives the opportunity.
In theory, absolutely does.
Yeah, it's totally theory.
It's early, that too, kind of, right? I mean, it is early. And, I mean, the digital platform is evolving, obviously.
Oh, it's completely the Wild West right now still.
Which is great. Yeah. And, I mean, and if people are looking for a specific genre, you know, this is an opportunity to kind of explore beyond the big... And certainly when the big two pretty much ignore other genres anyway and are 90%... Super.
But that's where the book stuff comes in. The Heidi's talking about. They're
sure.
Not really looking at the comic book world for those stores.
Or well, the digital publisher. Digital's also that kind of. I think it's that opportunity as well. And again, we're on the first steps and everything. Mm-hmm. Then jump in. Any thoughts on what's going on right now?
No, the sexual tension on this panel. I thought it was a spoon. I don't know. I think there's room for both, and I'm glad we have both. And, you know, like, I wouldn't have discovered a bunch of comics like Sixth Gun or, you know, what's the one with the doctor, Supernatural Doctor?
Oh, Witch Doctor.
Yes,
yeah, which I
absolutely.
Really these are things I specifically found on Comixology because either they were on sale or whatever, where they wouldn't have been on the front rack of my local comic store.
Has everyone seen the trailer for Red 2 that's been running this week?
It's great.
And audience? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finally, a summer movie with no robots, no superheroes, and I forget what the third thing is, and it's like in your face comic books, which is hilarious because I'm sure we all know Red is based on a comic book. Warren Ellis comic book.
Based on a comic.
But Ben, with that in mind, I you know, Lone Ranger tanking, Pacific Rim...
Well, yeah, the Lone Ranger audience are old-time radio fans. Are mostly dead.
But well, now we're discounting old-time radio fans.
Spurred Back doesn't live. Come on, Spurred Back, man.
Yeah, but no, and now in fairness, because honestly, Rob Salkowitz made the same point to me on my podcast, and I'm like, so Zorro was like on everybody's young mind when Zorro came up?
I think it... loves Zorro.
You know, exactly. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's easy to say, well, it's an old IP.
Right.
But... I just think we're at this very interesting time and this kind of backlash point. I mean, it started with John Carter a couple years ago, but
there's also, I mean, The Avengers was only last summer.
Are you saying a backlash against comic book movies?
No. What I do think, and this is something Salkowitz said, and I think it's food for thought, that maybe only Disney and Warner, because they've got recognizable IPs that have a lot of merchandising behind them, that maybe we'll see some sort of contraction from these big budget movies where they try an IP or something, and I just want to know what everybody's thoughts were on that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think there are also these opportunities popping up on television. I mean, Walking Dead is the biggest show there is. Men and women of all ages. You know, I think like Six Gun was developed this year, and there are a number of other ones either going on or in development. Is the feature actually coming?
Yeah, that's too bad. The pilot's coming.
But yeah,
Arrow.
Like, yeah. The stuff is still being mined. There's still an interest in it, and also I hope there's still an interest in it. You know, why not pull stories from here instead of going to the Alice in Wonderland well for the 100th time?
Sure.
Yeah, but I mean, we were just joking about Pacific Rim, which was a huge controversy or whatever. I mean, it was a huge robot and a huge monster, really. But, I mean, I think everybody was talking about how this movie flopped, but it didn't really flop because it was number one in Asia, and it still might not earn out. But, you know, I saw the dude there at the door was wearing a Jaeger pilot ribbon, and to me, you know, isn't what Comic-Con is all about, like, marketing to nerds? So, you know, this man with his ribbon here tells me that Jaeger pilot has already made it to, what do you got there, Doctor Who, and there's some other, Red Shirt, okay? So it's already, Pacific Rim has already entered the Nerd Hall of Fame. So basically what that means is in that 20 years, someone will announce a Pacific Rim reboot, okay? And it'll be a huge, huge success.
I don't know, because also I think that the mistake that Hollywood is learning is that, you know, when Scott Pilgrim came, and it killed at Comic-Con. It was going to be the greatest film ever, and I thought it was. It was an amazing film, a perfect film, I thought, but it failed miserably at the box office, which I think they don't understand yet that we're the audience that's going to go see it anyway, so of course it's going to kill here. Pacific Rim will be killed here. You know, like, people, of course, we want to see it. So we're almost the wrong audience to market to here. So when they see that Pacific Rim button, you're not going to see it outside of here that much. You know what I mean? So this is the place where we all nerds gather to enjoy what we like. So
what are we talking about?
I have no idea.
Part of the story.
I just think there's a kaiju attacking somewhere right now.
You got no thoughts on that smart guy, or what? Are you just having fun?
Are we still talking? I mean, what is the question?
Well, I'm just saying, as far as genre films,
it's been a long day. Sorry,
huh?
It's been a long day.
But, all right, is it possible to launch new IP?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it ultimately comes down to the strength of the film. I mean, at the end of the day, is it a good movie or a bad movie? Is what people care about.
I completely agree. Like Heidi said, there are analysts that are out there that almost want this stuff to fail.
Yeah.
There's a backlash from guys like Scorsese and Spielberg, which is interesting to hear from Spielberg, that are like, the day is coming when we're going to have five of these big blockbuster movies that are going to fail in a row, and the studios are going to do some sort of collective guess.
They're not wrong, though. If that did happen, it would be a collective
guess. I disagree. Guess. I think especially after 10-plus years of what we've been doing, I think we are bulletproof from genre failure. I think this will continue. I think it is part of the mix of big studios. And like you yourself said, I think films will succeed and fail based on the fact if it's a good story or not. I don't think you need to spend $200 million on a Western.
No.
And that's where I think Lone Ranger, part of its failure is and stuff. I just started reading that John Carter book. Is it good?
I haven't read the whole thing.
All right, it's sitting on my Kindle right now, and I'm only about 20 pages into it. But where they talk about, you know, what went wrong with the marketing of John Carter and what Disney did right and wrong and stuff. And yeah,
well, did it do okay part of internationally? Am I wrong? Did John Carter do all right internationally, though?
It did all right, but yeah. I think it just missed maybe.
But I feel like it was one of those films also where, before it came out, they were saying it's a failure. So
yes.
it was some sort of like
there's a feeding frenzy
in Hollywood
it, yeah.
where they people wanted to fail and they made it fail basically. And I think it was just some sort of Hollywood political thing that happened is why it failed.
The John Carter Disney knew it was going to fail a year before because the year before they didn't even have any toys. Like if you went to Toy Fair, they didn't even have John Carter toys. So they had so little faith in this movie year out that then they knew it was going to fail. And I saw the same thing happening, with Untested, Pacific Rim. The same thing where everybody doubting it, like, you know, was it possible people will watch giant robots and giant monsters? And I mean, I'm a huge John Carter fan, so I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this moment has come, you know, and I'm watching this movie. But I was one of only 10 people.
Why don't you repurpose your Friday Night Lights toys?
Well, Taylor Kitsch is another story. I think his new IP is not happening. So.
But going to the question of, you know, big monsters and giant robots, and will anybody watch that? I mean, Power Rangers is going on 20 years.
Right.
Know? So there is an audience for that stuff.
Well, I guarantee...
Godzilla is here.
I guarantee you there will be a Pacific Rim something in 5 years or 2 years or 3 years. There'll be a TV show or webzodes or something, and people will be like, oh my God, this is so hot. You know, Felicia Day is in it. You know.
Hey, if it's good. It's good. I like that. Heidi,
Felicia Day, line one.
You, before the panel, I kind of threw out the question of things that you guys might want to talk about, and I thought you brought up an interesting thing regarding comics, and I'll let you kind of pose the question. Huh? Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I do my podcast. I also have a blog. I mean, I'm honored to be on this.
You guys read The Beat, don't you?
But, they said I was doing a podcast for 2 years, so I guess that means I do a podcast. And I often say things on my podcast that I wouldn't write in my blog because you really have to be dedicated to listen to a podcast, whereas if I write it on my blog, you'll just cut and paste it, and I'll be in real trouble. But this is something that is definitely being talked about in the bars at Comic-Con and, you know, at dinners and everything, is that mainstream comics, or I should say corporate comics, which is what I call comic companies that are owned by corporations, have really stopped developing hugely influential artists. And if you look at superheroes, if you look at Marvel and DC, they have not developed emerging artists at all, like that has a style that is like, oh my God, we've got to draw like that, since maybe Frank Quitely. And I mean, before that, there was an endless stream of them, like, you know, starting with Neil Adams. First it was Kirby, then it was Neil Adams, you know, then it was John Byrne, then it was George Perez, and, you know, all the way down to Brian Hitch, you know. So and now I just don't see that. I don't see like this artist. I mean, the styles to me just seem to be much more generic now. I don't know. That's my take.
Is it a good thing that they are just copying styles? Because that's the thing we always hear. Like I know we all have several friends who do portfolio reviews, and they would say, you know, wow, I get all these commissions, and people are like, well, you're clearly a Jim Lee fan. You know, you draw like him, and that's great, but find your own style. You know, it's like, I think it's good to see all these new styles.
I see who the you say is a like a really successful stylist?
Oh, successful is the word. Yeah. That's
Somni. Okay. Chris Somni. I would say it's a unique American artist. Somni. Yeah. Chris Somni.
Yeah.
And I there's a but few and far between. And go on.
I would say Somni absolutely is somebody who's been, you know, coming on and everything. But he's still not drawing the crossover event for Marvel or DC.
Okay.
And he's not working at DC. So, you know, like, you know. Anyway. But,
I'm sorry, could you please speak up?
I can't really speak up on that one. But, I mean, I think especially, you know, I'll say it for the podcast. It's like, if you look at DC Comics, I mean, I think they have a very strict house staff.
It's very generic house staff.
It's also being imported from other countries where I think the dollar might be stronger, and I think that that is a big reason why it's cheaper and more cost-effective to go to South America and Europe and other places to get these artists.
And I think if you look, again, outside superhero comics, you'll see... I mean, Paul Pope is a huge influence, but I mean, artists like the Twins, you know, like Vaughn Moon, like Becky Cloonan... you know, I mean, Somni is definitely one. You know, Mick Doyle is a major. I mean, and there's, you know, web cartoonists as well. And I mean, outside of comics, they're doing, or outside of superheroes, I should say, they're doing tremendously well. I don't see that influence, except for a book like Hawkeye, which is like, oh my God, it's so weird, you know, because it's drawn in a contemporary style. So I think this is really, I mean, and I would throw this open to the August panel because. We just at Publishers Weekly ran a retailer survey, and they said that new readers coming in are not like, oh my God, it's a new Batman comic. I mean, they're like, oh my God, it's a new Brian K. Vaughan comic. Or, I mean, they are really moving away from the hegemony of the big two.
Because I was going to say, don't you think since the Image years that the pendulum swung back to writers for the last 10 years and it was more of a writer-driven industry then? I mean, again, you've got your Quietlys and others like that, but I do think that people were coming more for story rather than art like they were in the 90s.
I think it's also, you know, we're seeing this in comics, the same thing that we've been seeing in TV for the last couple of years, which is not just that people are following writers, but they're following stuff that they like and they don't necessarily care where it came from. You know, I think Marvel and DC mean a lot less than they used to.
Like the big networks, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't know, well, bring it back to that example, but most people don't know what network the show that they love is on. You know, we DVR it and then we watch it when we want to watch it. You know, it's kind of the same that's happening with comics. It's, I like Batman, so I'm going to read this, and I like Walking Dead, so I'm going to read this, and there's no difference to the average comic book reader where any of this stuff is coming from.
I disagree with that. I think brands...
No, I'm right.
I'll disagree anyways, just go out on a limb there. I think brand does matter because it's a shared universe. With TV shows, it's not like there's continuity between the different shows on the different networks and stuff. Whereas if you're in for a penny or whatever on the DC or the Marvel universe, you may be reluctant to get in on the other one just to try to keep
both straight. That's true, but you can also, I mean, and I do. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm loath to admit this on this panel, but I'm a casual comic reader. So I'm overwhelmed by everything that you're saying. But, like, someone said, hey, go pick up Avengers Academy, and I read them all, and I didn't need to read anything else. I didn't know where it fit in, where with, you know, A versus X. But I got enough from that comic itself. If the writer's doing a good job, you don't need the tapestry.
It's okay that you don't know where it fits in the tapestry. I'm pretty sure some of their editors aren't quite sure.
And I'm sure there are some that you have to read all of them.
But I do anyways, just to make sure.
John, I was wondering, too, for event to event, how sales numbers have gone. Because the argument a lot of times for events that, for the critics, are like, yeah, that wasn't that good, the response back from the big two is, well, it sold through the roof. And clearly, that's why we keep doing event, event, event. Are they holding their numbers? It certainly does. I mean, we're certainly a long way away from the Civil War years.
Oh, yeah. Civil War not only shot through the roof in terms of sales and stuff, but it caused... double, triple, or quadrupling of sales for the crossover issues and stuff. Same with Blackest Night, particularly when they had those promotional power rings. And things were selling like five times what they would sell otherwise. Now, you get a little bit of a bump on some of the crossovers, but not much. Age of Ultron, which you could argue was an event. Or not.
Sure, it's an event. Absolutely, it's an event.
Well, they didn't want to sell it like it was a big event.
It didn't tie into everything and stuff. There were some connected issues. So you could argue either way.
Okay.
And it sold, you know, near the top of the list, but not at the top of the list. So now with Forever Evil and... and Infinity and stuff will have a really good gauge. Because
is there one called Infinity and stuff? That's amazing.
I may be paraphrasing.
The end stuff or other extra. Yeah, those are extra issues, of course, but yes.
I think it's Infinity plus one.
They're really phoning it in now.
Infinity and stuff.
Yes, they are phoning it in now. No, I think
it's
the...
It's free. Follow the Tolling Adventure.
I mean, the crossovers sell. I mean, that's whatever works at the top, they're going to replicate.
They sell, but it's... Yeah, again, I mean, I just think that it seems like the pie is being cut in smaller pieces. And yes, Marvel and DC still dominate, yeah, but not...
The pie is getting cut in smaller pieces. The well is running dry. They keep going back to the same gimmicks and stuff. One of the things I noticed from going through the numbers recently is that the average issue number on the top 300 has suddenly dropped over the last 8 months to about a third of what it was, and it's getting towards about a 20 for the average issue numbers.
And that's 20,000.
The actual issue numbers.
Oh, excuse me. I see. Oh, and then cancellation. Is that what you're saying? Or?
Well, is it like The Walking Dead, the longest running?
No, current actually, comic? It's not. Sonic the Hedgehog, I believe, is, but I can be wrong on that. Unless you count some of the ones where they've done the number of gimmicks, like Journey into Mystery, which is up in the 600s and about to end. X-Factor 262 or something, which is about to end.
Did the Archie books renumber? I mean, does Archie still?
Well,
I mean,
Sonic's an Archie book, so yeah.
Sonic's Archie's...
Well, I know Sonic, but I mean, just saying, like, Betty and Veronica and Archie.
Those are up in the 100.
They're doing well.
80, 100 and
up. Oh, because Betty and Veronica, I mean, you know, they've been 30 years, 40 years, whatever. Stuff.
They tend to fall below the top 300, so I don't tend to do those in my numbers.
Well, and again, and I love that about Archie, you know, yeah, direct market, not so good, but, you know, every supermarket, every book, you know, book scan and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What are you smiling about, Kilpatrick? What do you got?
It's halfway through. Should we open up some questions and see?
We can. Do people have questions?
We'll take anything. We'll talk about podcasting or whatever.
We are happy to talk about podcasting. I also thought that this is a good opportunity, though, to have a bunch of different shows kind of give what they've been learning on their podcasts and exchange ideas, because we rarely all get together and stuff. But of course, we do want to.
Clubhouse.
Sir, questions. Sir.
Damn it.
Going back to digital comics. I know earlier, like 2 weeks ago at Image Expo, they actually announced DRM-free comics on their site. I just wanted to know, I guess the open question thing, how do you feel that would help the industry? Because I'm kind of getting back into comics. I mean, I will read Marvel and DC titles, but initially I was here for Pat Loca, but...
He's right here.
I'm part Asian, can I pass? Is that cool? No?
But a lot of the stuff that he puts out on his podcast, like I actually started reading, like Alpha Man from Image, I started reading just from listening to his podcast. But I think for me is a big deal is the DRM free stuff, because it's just like a hard copy issue where if I wanted to go back and read it, or if there's no Wi-Fi or I can't get to it online, I can just easily, you know, read on here.
I think it's really important, particularly when Marvel did that event where they released, 700 free number one issues and essentially took Comicology down for a little bit, I think it was. You know, there are a lot of people, it's just, I want to read the comics I've already bought, and they couldn't.
Right.
So getting it to where you can actually have your own copy, I think, is good. Do I think that's where things are headed? Maybe not.
Why not?
I want to do it.
It's not good for the publishers. I think they want to go more towards a subscription or a Clubhouse kind of model where you pay the monthly fee and get access to that.
I understand. Well, I keep saying, and everyone tells me, no, it's not like the music industry, but it seems like it's very much what's happening with comics and digital is very much like what happened with the music industry, that there was huge reluctance, and we had devices that no longer exist because they were DRM devices and stuff, and you know, I think that the users will, unless they're happy to continue to put up with piracy and stuff, I mean, I think they are going to have to eventually deal with it and accept it. And I'm glad that Image took that first, well, they didn't take the first step, in fairness. I know
Slave labor,
2000 AD, you know, several other, you know, so. But no, I think it's a good thing. Are there how-to, like for the podcasters out there, do you guys have questions in terms of anything in terms of what we do for our show that you guys are struggling with or anything like that? We're happy to talk about that. There's plenty of other things we're ready to talk about as well. Okay.
Yeah, we never shut up. So.
I would certainly hope not. We all do podcasts. I mean, that's the thing. And like I said, and one of the reasons, and it's the description in the program and everything, This is the Super Bowl. We all are doing observations.
Are there podcasters out there? You guys, anybody have podcasts? Yeah? Sure. Awesome.
Yeah, a couple questions. How do you measure your audience? How do you know how many downloads or listens you're getting? And how are you funding your shows?
We use weight. Stop it. All coming together in a big scale.
I do Libsyn. Does everyone up here Libsyn?
Yeah. All the services track your downloads and track all that stuff.
Do you know about Libsyn, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and yeah, they're wonderful. They give you numbers and where they're coming from. And
mm-hmm. They bring it down by region. Country.
I'm old school. I just do a head count as I record.
There you go.
Let's all tell what our numbers are.
But I got no problem with that.
And then as far as the monetary question, we have sponsors help pay for our bills. Like, for instance, Discount Comic Book Service, plug is right here in our audience. They actually sponsor many podcasts, so they're a big help to the podcast community overall.
Has it helped, guys? Do you guys, is it working? Obviously, that's why you're sticking with us, I'm assuming. They're nodding. One's nodding, one's laughing. So
that's good to hear. I mean,
all right, exactly. There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
people are your customer and they talk about you.
Cool.
Yeah, we've had Dynamic Forces that sponsored us for years, and they, of course, now they have Dynamite Entertainment, so that's certainly, we mention them every show, and we're the reason they're successful. So
I'm a little unusual, I think, from some of the others. I'm completely sponsor free and stuff. I just made that decision early on. But I've had offers and stuff from DCBS and whatnot, and I talk about them all the time anyways because I'm a customer and I love them. They're great. But it's just out of pocket. But really, podcasting is not that expensive. You got a little bit for the hosting, you got a little bit of equipment, and once you're set up, you're pretty good to go.
Yeah, I mean, we're unusual in that our podcast is actually sponsored by a magazine, Publishers Weekly, which is the industry bible of the publishing industry. But we have our own special back end that does not do on Libsyn, and our numbers are sometimes very strange. But we have discovered, and Calvin and I are really the comics people, and Kate are really the comics people at Publishers Weekly, so we're probably a little bit more passionate about it. We are actually doing here at Comic-Con, so it worked the first day. We only have 3 more days to go. Where we're doing interviews here, and Kate, who's our producer, is back home, so she's just downloading, put them all on Dropbox, she's downloading them and doing a daily interview podcast. It's only like 15 minutes, 30 minutes long, but we managed to do it the first day, and they laughed at us when we said we were going to try to do it, so I'm really psyched that, with an iPhone and a Dropbox, we could do that, and Kate, who's amazing, so.
That's awesome.
And Kate, everybody does need Kate, I will say that. She also can't provide stats.
We have another question.
Go ahead.
Yeah. There was a hand over there.
Yeah, there was another hand. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just had a question. With video games, like YouTubers and stuff, they talk about an indie game. It can make tens or 100,000 sales. Do you think that an indie comic can be successful just by getting podcasters and
I fucking hope so.
Yeah. I honestly think Mike Norton's got a spotlight this weekend, and don't get me wrong, he's done very impressive work, and especially the last couple of years, but I do believe that the foundation of Mike Norton fans came from podcasting.
There's a lot of them, Hickman really embraced podcasts right away in the very beginning, and he still comes and he's very gracious and he's doing very well, thanks to us.
And again, there's that threshold of what defines success. And luckily, there have been a few image creators that have had big 5-figure numbers monthly for their image books. But I also see guys that are brand new, that don't have this name recognition, that have come up with an interesting idea. And, their books are cost-effective enough that they make a mid-4-figure monthly number, and they're making money on their books.
We'll sell a book or two. I mean, if we have somebody on the podcast or we talk about it, all of us. I mean, one of our listeners will get interested, if not many of them will, and they'll pick it up. So, yeah, I think it's good for them.
Yeah, anecdotal.
Yeah.
I always get feedback from people, I wouldn't have thought of buying that if I hadn't heard the guy on your show. So.
Yeah, I get that. And to me, that's the biggest sign of success for the podcast.
No one heard of Batman until I mentioned it on my show. And it was like, look at it now.
I don't know who's bowling upstairs, but
we were speculating that over here. That's what we're doing.
What?
We were speculating that over here. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, okay. That's all good.
Oh, we're having a different panel about it.
There's two things that can happen. One is what they said, is that you can build your audience through being on the show, so your name gets out there to fans, which is what Norton, I think, did, and a lot of people like that, starting very early on. Two is the book, just the book itself can get... I think one of the books we talked about a lot was Aphrodisiac, and we talked to Jim Rugg about it specifically, and he said that when it came out after he went to a con, he sold all of his books to people who had heard it on our show.
Yep.
So those are two things that can happen.
Sure.
Glenn.
Do you guys have in mind an ideal duration? I was going to say length, but dirty. time.
Length of podcast?
For a given podcast, for a given episode.
I'm the wrong guy to ask.
Yeah.
Well, and honestly, I have a very fortunate problem that a lot of people want to be on my show. And also, I have a background in radio. So, because of that, I don't think it's bad to have three guests, sometimes four or five, and present a weekly show that might be over 3 hours. Because I do think that we're a time-shifting society, and I do think that, you know, or I've been the other, because some people have said that my show's too long, and I'm like, well, it's no different than if you're watching, like, Letterman or Leno, and you really want to see that band, but you don't care about the comic. So, you know, pick the parts you want, or, you know, like I said, listen on your own schedule and stuff. So that's what I do.
Are
everybody
you
else?
Time codes these days?
Every now and then. I'm a one-man band, so a lot of times it's like, I just feel like I got to get the show up and be there at time, okay? Yes. Listen. And if you'll hear it, that's awesome. That's good for me.
I try to keep it between like hour 15. It's just, it feels to me anything longer than that sometimes can be tedious. Although you can stop, come back to it later. But then I have episodes like with our good friend Uncle Sal, 2 hours, 45 minutes, just go. Just go with it. So if it's going good, you don't want to stop it. Basically. So
I agree with that, especially interview-wise. Like, we try to keep the show about an hour. I've had 20-minute shows. I've had 2-hour shows. And those 2-hour shows are never just us sitting around talking about comics. It's with a guest, where I would talk for an hour with, you know, Garth Ennis or somebody like that. You know, and I'm not going to stop them. And if it's really long, we'll split it into 2 episodes. We'll try to do that. But I do agree in the fact that if it's too long, people might lose interest, you know, like, oh, you get bored. But then I hear from a lot of people, like, especially cartoonists, they're like, make your episodes longer because I listen as I'm drawing and it's great background noise, you know, and stuff like that. I'm like, all right.
I know people who do other, like, roofing and other kind of menial tasks that are like, God, thank you for
roofing.
I'm telling you, roofing and warehouse people are like...
Roofing, you told me to be a roofer earlier.
Roofies, guys, actually up.
Lawn mowing.
We're doing the roof. I'm sorry, Connor, go ahead.
We try to stick to it in an hour, unless we're interviewing somebody. Or I'm getting drunk and answering email questions. That's also where we'll go longer than that. But we've always run our show like a show. Like, we have a rundown, we've got a script, we hit time marks, we go out in an hour, like we're on the air. And I think that's a good sweet spot.
I just wing it. The conversation goes as long as it goes, as long as there's something worth saying and stuff. But on average, it does turn out to be about an hour.
The correct answer is 45 minutes for an informational podcast, 25 minutes for a comedy podcast.
He is rounding to the nearest minute, though. I will point that out.
It's all true. Ben, you got and you've only done like a handful of episodes so far for the comic writers panel.
Yes.
You got Lynn Wein on your show, which is awesome. Is it a set panel?
Yeah, we consider ourselves the 4 co-hosts of it. Me, Lynn Wein, Heath Corson, who is writing this new DC Direct movie, which has finally been announced, so we can justify him being on the podcast. And Adam Beechin, who wrote for comics and animation for years. And yeah, this was a carefully chosen 4-person panel because I think we each bring something different to it. You know, Heath is an enthusiast, Len is a lifer, Adam is a historian, and I'm there to hopefully keep things rolling and ask questions. But yeah, it comes out every Saturday. Those Nerdist Writers Panel Comics Edition will be usually the 4 of us. Sometimes we'll do, you know, one of us will not be there, or I will go off and do an interview with someone that I want to talk to.
Awesome. No, I like it. Are there other podcasts that you guys listen to that are not represented on this panel right now? I like Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman stuff. I think that's been a lot
Isn't
of fun.
Isn't that like 3 hours long also?
It is. Well, he's smart, though. He chops up into...
How do you have time to listen to yours and his?
I understand. No, I do understand.
While he records the background.
So, sir. War Rocket Ajax, an awesome show. Absolutely. Good guys. and girls when they have girls on. But no, it's like that's a cool.
I listen to a lot of like just comedy podcasts, and like, sort of like not to be pretentious, but a lot of BBC like radio different podcasts.
Whoa. Yeah,
excuse me. But
where are your epilogues?
They're hidden. But yeah, but I there's so much out there. There's so many. Like, it seems like there's a new podcast popping up every day, even with comics. And it's so tough to check out all of them, but I try to check them when I can.
Well, and by the way, not just to justify my long shows, but I also think that the beauty of audio, I really, because every time I dabble in audio or video every now and then, I do a video thing, I just really feel like you are locked in. You've got to, even on a device, you really have to lock in. Whereas audio, clip your MP3 player on, work out, shop. All right, I don't work out, but the shop. And, do whatever you need to do to get through the day, and that's the thing. And it's just there, just like talk radio. And I also, and again, coming from radio, I'm disappointed with as talk radio contracts and becomes so political, and entertainment talk, if it exists, is few and far between on radio. I just think podcasting is still this Wild West frontier where there is opportunity to really get into things. We're all obviously fans of niche programming and things like Comic-Con. Outside of podcasting, what kind of programming do you have? G4 is gone.
Can I interrupt for one second?
Please.
I disagree that podcasting is still a Wild West. I think it was a few years ago. I think it's starting to get more and more formalized. And
in what way?
I don't know that that's a bad thing. I'm generally not going to hear of your podcast unless it's on Nerdist or Earwolf or NPR or, you know, it's been curated in some way, other than things that are directed to me specifically on Twitter. You know, I think it's awesome that the opportunity is still there for anyone to pick up a microphone and do it, but I wonder about how many people are actually listening to those. And I do think if you do it consistently and long for a long enough time that you will find an audience, but I don't think it's the kind of thing, I don't think we are where we were 5 years ago when it was anyone who created a podcast got ears.
Fair enough. Any other thoughts for all?
Controversial?
Hey, no. Well, you know, you got.
I was afraid he was going to go. We're like the post-apocalyptic age or something like that. How long do I need to be doing this, and how consistently to get noticed?
I think he's right. I think that podcasting, like everything else, it's celebrity and brand driven now.
But now you and I aren't—we're not affiliated with anybody. We do Fine Pants. Does these everybody?
No, but because we are old enough where we had an audience to begin with, because there weren't a lot of shows around.
You get the guests that people want to hear from, like your.
Well, sure, but I. But that's it. But I think that's possible for any show. And don't get me wrong; it depends on your subject, the availability of the people, and stuff. But
you talk to this.
No, because I think it is very hard to get. I mean, we don't do guests so much on our show. But I mean, we go out and do little interviews in the field from time to time. But I mean, I think just the competition from the pros right now. I mean, it's like
professional media people do. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
And they're the top. If you go to iTunes, the top shows are all NPR, Daily Show. I mean, it's brand.
I think, you know, it's all about discoverability with anything, which is even what we're talking about with digital comics earlier. And I mean, if you're a superstar, you will emerge, but you know, then you'll get picked up by Nerdist, or you get you know, but get your own show on NPR or whatever. You know, and I mean, you have to start. If you're a future superstar, you can do it, you know? I mean, you just get your mic and your hosting and you do it and, you know, promote and you will be discovered. I mean, I think talent rises, but I think to get to...
It's harder to break through that barrier.
It's harder to break through.
Sure.
And to be successful, I think now you have to be on a professional platform.
Well,
in a lot of different mediums.
But I would also say, and I want to hear what you have to say as well, but the initial thought for pros that are now getting into podcasting, professional broadcasters, is keep it short. They have a lot. They are concerned about time constraints. They are concerned about what they present. They're happy to get in the PR line and do the red carpet thing and give you interviews from the Avengers movie. But if they're going to, you know, again, I think everyone that goes online wants more than surface information. And I think a lot of the professional media people that's just how they're wired, or at least this generation is only wired to give you surface stuff, 5 or 10 minutes, and let's move on to something else and try one of our other podcasts on there, versus the long form content that I think a lot of these shows provide, and hopefully other good podcasters out there as well. But that's just me.
I was going to say, a network like Earwolf or Nerdist or whatever, it could only help you so much. I mean, just because the show is on, I mean, I listen to a lot of shows that are on Nerdist, but I've never heard, I almost never hear anybody on any of the shows on Nerdist that I listen to mention any other podcast that's on Nerdist. So I wouldn't know what podcasts are on there unless it's like, unless I went to their website and checked all of them. I don't do that. I'm listening to the podcast, I'm not listening to the website. You know, like, I wouldn't, like, I never hear any Airwolf. I only listen to, like, one Airwolf show anymore, but I never hear any Airwolf shows mentioned on any other Airwolf shows. The only Maximum Fun does that, but I don't think anybody else does.
Yeah, Kevin Smith does it.
Stitcher does. Yeah, some of the shows in Stitcher, I think.
But a lot of those, you know, those big name podcast networks, they're not promoting. But if someone mentions a podcast on a podcast I'm listening to, if it sounds at all interesting, I'll check it out. It doesn't matter. It's like, oh well, they have episodes. They, you know, I can download them. That's fine. I don't care if it's name attached or not. I don't care what server.
All right, excellent. Now, Ben, go ahead, sir. Question.
Ben, what would it take for you to listen to a brand new podcast from someone you've never heard of?
You have to tweet me directly. or tweet Ben Acker directly, and he'll tell me about it. Honestly, like, that's kind of what it is, because I listen to so few podcasts anymore, because I don't have time. So it's finding, I mean, like you said, it's finding podcasts through other podcasts, or if I know someone who has appeared on something, you know, then I'll go listen to that other thing, and if I like that other thing, I'll stick around and listen to some more of them. I think the last one I discovered cold was the Night Vale podcast, which is a great podcast. You guys should all check it out. And I think it was because someone tweeted at the Thrilling Adventure account and said, hey, you guys would like this. And I do. They were right.
Well, I think it's also like, even from, we'll get a listener that tuned in for, say, Garth Ennis, maybe just for Garth Ennis, or maybe a TV or film person I'll get, and they're not normally comic people, but they maybe read them when they were kids. And I've got some emails, people are like, oh, I tuned in for your interview with whoever from this TV show. And they go, well, it's nice to hear about comic. I'm not going to go back to the store, I might, but it's nice to hear about what's out there again. And so we gained a new listener that way.
That is the way I hear about other people, you know, we're talking about not me specifically. Other people finding my podcast is, I like Breaking Bad, so I listen to it. And it's Gilligan Interview, so now I listen to a bunch of them. There are gateway personalities.
Should we run down the list of any books that we're reading right now that we're really enjoying and stuff? I'll say that I'm happy to start off and say Satellite Sam, Matt Fraction and Howard Chaykin's new Image book.
That book's made for you.
It really is. It is. It's about the golden age of television, and I'm such a broadcast nerd that of course I love that book. But I do. I think it's fantastic, and I think it's classic Chaykin back, you know, really with a subject that he's excited about. Matt says he's totally writing it, and Howard is happy to draw it, and they had initial talks, but it's Matt writing, Howard drawing, and I think it's a match made in heaven.
What's it called again?
Satellite Sam from Image Comics. It's really, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's in my to-read pile. For me, it's Hawkeye and Daredevil. Those are my two go-to books right now.
Oh, those are excellent suggestions. I'm going to go with Astro City.
Happy it's back.
Oh, second issue was brilliant.
Yep.
First issue was great, too. Yeah.
I don't really read periodical comics. I read Saga. But I read so many graphic novels all the time. A book that I love that came out just recently was called Good Dog from Fantagraphics by Graham Chaffee. Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I love animal stories. It's like White Fang. It's like an urban White Fang. It's so good, and you will cry because it's a dog.
I mean, there's definitely mainstream stuff I pick up, like some, you know, it's Scott Snyder's Batman I'm loving, you know, like the Avengers Arena I really like. But I pick up a lot of like independent small press stuff in graphic novel wise. I think one of my favorite graphic novels of the year so far is Lucy Nicely's new one. Relish is fantastic. It's like, if you're a foodie, you'll love it. You're a comic book person, you'll love it. You're both, you'll really, really love it. So,
I think Hawkeye is a book that I'm just constantly surprised that they put out, because it's so unusual. It's so much not a Marvel book in terms of presentation, and beyond the great writing and art, I'm just amazed they keep publishing it. So I have such low expectations, but it's wonderful.
Is that it? I'm already reading that. What else?
Jeez, let's see. We have 5 minutes, and we just brainstorm. Let's see. What are you into?
You guys, I was told to read Avengers Academy. I thought it would be more like the OC with superheroes, and it's not, but it's still really good. That's kind of it. I have to read the new Lock and Key, the last Lock and Key.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
There's a lot of great image stuff.
Absolutely.
Also, it turns out, listen.
Yeah, East of West. East West, yes.
East of West. You know, image.
Oh,
so. Yeah. Well, that go ahead, Ben, if you had another one, because I didn't want to step on you if you had one more, but I was
yeah, I got a lot more, John.
Yeah, go.
Because I read books with words and not pictures. Yeah, sorry to blow your mind. Listen, there's this book that has been out for apparently 40 years called The Jaws Log, and it's Carl Gottlieb. Are you reading that? Have you read this?
Tell us.
It's hilarious. It's Carl Gottlieb, who wrote was the credited screenwriter on Jaws, or one of two, kept a diary during the production of the film and kind of cleaned it up and made it into this real-time account of how the film is made. And I did not know about it until I talked to Carl Gottlieb recently, and he was like, read my book. And I was like, what? Okay. It is great. If you have any interest in television or film making and how these things are put together, check out the Jaws Log. Also, there's a great podcast called What Are You Reading? By Matt Debenham, who is a writer. He has a great book called The Book of Right and Wrong. But he talks to different people, a lot of writers, but many other people every week, about what they're reading. And he keeps talking about Stephen King. And I've read a lot of Stephen King. But now I'm reading The Shining. And I've never read The Shining, and I haven't seen the movie in 25 years.
Sure.
Guys, The Shining, the novel by Stephen King, not great.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Only okay.
But interesting.
Art, yeah. She creeps.
Sorry to ruin all your childhoods, but it's only okay.
That was my favorite G4 segment, Your Childhood Sucked, when they bring back like commercials for bad toys and television shows. That's like, yeah, not as good as you remembered it. Don't kid yourself. I like that. Now, some of us have been doing this for 8 years. Some of us have only been doing it for a few months. Thoughts on what you're doing with your show right now? And, you know, I mean, I'm not stopping anytime soon. I'm 8 years in. I'm still enjoying it. I learned something from every guest, including the repeat ones. And like I said, I think the industry's at an interesting point, and I'm pleased to be on the front row watching.
Yeah, still doing the show, still loving, learning new things all the time. The anniversary this year of X-Men and Avengers, learning stuff about that all the time. I'm reading Marvel books now. Never done it before the podcast, so I'm learning stuff all the time.
We need quick ones real fast, and then we got
to
wrap up.
I just want to give a shout-out to Chris Marshall, my co-host, who also does the Collected Comic Library. Enjoy doing stuff with him. Enjoy reading comics and talking about them. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and we really want to expand it. We're only bi-weekly now, and we really want to get to it weekly at some point.
Good.
So get our schedules together, and more to come, as we always say.
Approaching our episode 500, I do it every week, and it's like I may cut back to maybe just twice a month after that, because I've got but we'll see. For now, I still love it. It's still entertaining. It's fun to me, so yeah.
We are rapidly approaching our 400th weekly episode, and it's a giant albatross around our neck. Weekly nonsense we talk. No, it's the most fun thing we do of everything we do, and getting to talk to my friends for an hour a week is and talk about crazy stuff is fun. It's the most fun thing we do.
He's getting choked up. I like that.
You guys, we're still doing the Thrilling Adventure Hour, and it is a comic book here at... It's premiering here.
Successful Kickstarter.
Go pick it up. Arkea has it. Isn't that nice? It looks really nice. I'll sign it for you if you want. Just the poster.
Excellent.
The Nerdist Writers Panel rolls on. We're approaching our 100th episode, which we recorded at Largo at the Cornet, which is 3 times the size of our usual venue. And it's got Vince Gilligan and Liz Merriweather, who created The New Girl, and Brian Fuller, who created Hannibal and other nerdy stuff you love. And... like everyone, Greg Daniels, it was a lot of fun. So that'll be coming out in a couple weeks, and the comics panel comes out every Saturday. And if I am still doing this stuff in 300 more episodes, I will kill myself.
These are excellent shows. If you don't listen to them, I recommend that you do. Thank you for your time, and thanks a lot for coming out.
The
show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.